Welcome to a brand new radio show on Van Cleek FM. This is a show about, you might have guessed it from the theme music, food. My name is Jean Sarrazin, and I'm joined in the studio by Chef Bruce. Hello, Bruce.
Hey, Jean.
Thanks for joining us. This is really exciting. This is our maiden voyage of this radio show. We're going to take an hour every week to sort of do a roundup and a summary of what's happening on the culinary front in and around Van Cleek Hill. And we're really grateful that we've managed to pull you away from the Bose operation just down the street here to sit with us for an hour and chat about all things to do with food, local food especially, right?
Indeed.
So let's get right into it. The main content of our show this week, you and I took a little visit down the highway to Penny's Market. So we're going to be bringing our listeners some highlights from that visit. But also, we want to introduce you to our listeners, let them know who you are and what you're about. And as I was saying before we turn on the microphones, what your street cred is in terms of, you've been around the block in terms of creating dishes and writing recipes and all sorts of stuff. So why don't we start there, Bruce? You've mentioned to me you ran a restaurant on Salt Spring Island, the extreme west end of the country in BC.
Bruce's Kitchen. And it was a small little cafe on the island. It was good.
Yeah. What kind of stuff did you do there?
Mostly, well, we focused on a lot of local. My background, everybody always asks, what's your favorite food is? What do you cook? What's your cuisine?
Yeah.
And I'm sort of influenced by the Mediterranean, North Africa, Morocco, Southern Italy, Spain. Those sorts of flavors, big, bold flavors with a bit of heat to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the sort of style of cuisine. Some classical stuff thrown in just for fun, because that was my background in a culinary in my apprenticeship. But primarily focusing with using local ingredients and sustainable fish and seafood and that sort of thing.
Mm, sounds fantastic. Where did you do your apprenticeship?
I did my apprenticeship in Toronto, started in 81 at a place called the Babsies in Mississauga, which was run by a guy named Herbert Sanzoni, who was the first chef at the Windsor Arms, which was then sort of a temple of gastronomy in Toronto. And I worked for him for a year.
I remember the Windsor Arms.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then after a year, I went to work for a young guy named Terry Seed, who had been Herb's executive sous chef at the Windsor Arms and was then running a kitchen called the Hazelton Cafe in Hazelton Lanes in Toronto. And I did my apprenticeship there, finished my apprenticeship there, and then worked in a bunch of places in Toronto. And then moved up to Ottawa in 91,
mm-hmm.
and worked in a restaurant. There used to be two Maxwell's, even before the most recent one closed. There was another Maxwell's in the market at that time, and it had a wood-burning pizza oven. It was a lovely place. And then I went to work, which was a very cool job, at the Loeb on Beechwood. And at that point, the Loeb supermarkets were hiring chefs to run their butcher counters. And we were Yeah, it was kind of interesting because we were to talk to people. So you would come in and say, I want to serve rack of lamb on Saturday. How do I prepare it? And we only used Canadian lamb, which was really quite lovely. And in those days, the grocery store still had a proper butcher. So we were getting what's called hanging beef. So all the beef was coming in on rails, like sides of beef, not just... So there's two ways you get it sometimes. This is getting sort of off topic a bit, but
this is interesting.
This will come along the way.
Yeah.
You can get what's called box beef. So you get a box of strip loins or a box of tenderloins, and all you have to do is basically trim them down a little bit and slice them into steaks. That does not require a huge skill set. Taking a side of beef and trimming it down and getting all the primal cuts out of it and then making beautiful roasts for the counter is another way to do it, which takes much more skill.
You got to know what you're doing.
And then you have to know what to do with all the trim.
Right.
We made all our own sausages, which was really quite remarkable. And the two butchers that worked there, one of whom actually still works there now, even though it's a Metro, a guy named Michelle, is a fantastic butcher, made just beautiful, just cut beautiful meat. Very, very European, very small roast, very perfect cut along the muscle group, really, really nice cutting. And we did, we also cut pork and lamb the same way. I remember one Easter we went through 22 whole lambs and 4 cases of legs.
Oh, man.
Yeah, in a one-week period.
That's a lot of meat.
That's a lot of lamb.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
But also a phenomenal experience.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
And I met a lot of really fascinating people, a lot of wonderful people who I'm still in touch with. The customers were remarkable because that particular grocery store is right on the cusp of Rockcliffe Park, which a lot of the ambassadors, a lot of the ambassadors' wives came down, chefs from the different embassies, all sorts of wonderful people.
Sounds like the who's who of Ottawa.
It was really quite a lot
hanging
of fun.
Out there, yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic experience for you.
I came back and I wound up in Midland, which is over on Georgian Bay.
Ah, I grew up in Midland. I know Midland well.
Well, there's a spot there called Ciboulette and Company, which is run by a young guy I know, a catering company, which is great. And I got back in touch with Steve at the brewery, and we got chatting, and I came out to do an Oktoberfest and do the School of Bock, which was a lot of fun. And then we got chatting about website and this and that. And then Steve ended up offering me a job with the company.
That's really great. So that's
how I've known Steve since I opened the brewery.
Okay. Oh, you did know him way back then?
Oh, I know. Yeah, yeah. Okay. I remember drinking the beer for the first time in the Black Tomato in Ottawa. It was fantastic. And we got chatting, and I was teaching a lot at the Urban Element and Algonquin College in those days. And I started using the beer in the recipes I was working with.
Huh?
Because, again, it was local and super high quality and new and lovely.
Yeah.
And so,
all natural, organic.
Oh, it was fantastic. Spring water. And it tastes great.
Yes.
You know, it's like a lot of things. And I think people will discover as we move forward with the show that I'm not shy to voice an opinion. And one of the most important things is that it's all well and good to be organic or local or espouse all these wonderful ideals. But if the quality is not behind the product, I'm not going to endorse it or use it. You have to have the quality there. And from the beginning, the quality was in Bose. It was evident and it was delicious and wonderful. And now that we're brewing even more and different and interesting beers, it continues to be a journey that's wonderful to be part of.
Sounds like a combination made in heaven. A chef like you with the experience you have and our very own local microbrewery coming together. We're very fortunate to have this happening in our little community of Anklik Hill. Mm-hmm. So this is what the show is going to be about, I think, is a celebration of that whole domain of good beer and beer-inspired recipes, I suppose. But also what we're hoping for is that the recipe that you write on a monthly basis, I guess, that goes onto the website. And we're hoping to get some maybe insights into what inspired you to write it and maybe some tips on how to pull it off like a pro. And that'll be an important feature of our show on a regular basis. In preparation for this show, you and I took a little visit down the highway to Penny's Market about a week and a half ago, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Some highlights from that visit, some audio clips from the owner-operator of the market, Peter Amstutz, and his partner, Dory, and also the person that runs the cash there, Janice. For people who don't know, it's at McCrimmon's Corners. That's the exit just west of Herb's Service Center, which is at the foot of Highway 34 here and 417. So you continue west about 4 or 5 kilometers, and you come up to McCrimmon's Corners, and that's where Penny's Market is. You just go up the ramp off of the westerly bound direction of 417, go up the ramp, and it's staring you right in the face as you come to the overpass. So we went in, and the first thing that we came across was
just as you came in the door, there was
the organic vegetables.
I love the fact that the leeks are standing in sand. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Keeps them so fresh, so nice.
Yeah, it does. Wood. And leeks are one of my favorite vegetables.
I usually load up on the 3 or 4 leeks every time I come.
We sell them like crazy. Now, you see, those are not organic, but they are local.
Yeah.
So our objective is local and organic would be wonderful.
Sometimes one, sometimes the other, sometimes it's both.
If I was wavering, if there was like a pile of organic leeks and a pile of local leeks beside each other, I would take local.
Yeah, well, that's it. I would rather take local from, like you said, local than take organic, say, from California.
Yeah, exactly. Enough said there.
Yeah.
I love these cups.
Yeah, you could do so much
wrap
with those.
Wrap them in ham.
Well, I'm Dutch, so.
Oh, so you.
So I know,
yes. All about
Witloof. Witloof. There you go, yes.
Touched on a little familiar nerve with Dory, Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about Witloof.
It's wonderful. Belgium endives are like a lot of other vegetables, like rapini, radicchio. They're very bitter, but when combined with the right ingredients, they're absolutely delicious. So if you put them in a slightly creamy dressing with a nice bit of crumbled blue cheese, you've got an absolutely gorgeous combination. But the other thing that's really great about endives that a lot of people don't think about is cooking them. So yeah. As opposed to just chopping them up and throwing them into a salad, braising them in a little bit of stock or even beer. I have a recipe on the Bose website for Belgium endives that are wrapped in beer and then made with topped with a hollandaise sauce that's flavored with the beer.
Oh, my goodness.
And they're really quite delicious.
That sounds fantastic.
That way. Yeah, it's not... It's a little rich, but it's really quite delicious, and it's the kind of thing you eat in the middle of the winter when you're looking for local vegetables. And there's a place in Saint-Clet in Quebec, just on the other side of the border,
yes,
that grows them, and they're just, as I say, absolutely wonderful. So,
and the endive sort of holds its form, doesn't it? It doesn't sort of shrivel up.
No, it'll stand up pretty well to most cooking.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was just a little insight into the vegetable section of Penny's Market. We went down, it was off to the left and to the right as you first go in. They had celery root or celeriac. They had several different kinds of beets, potatoes, carrots. Also at the front of the store, just as you came in, there was a display of all different kinds of grains and flakes and things like that.
The grains are all local from a supplier in the Eastern Townships. Nice. And it's all organic. It's certified organic, all of it.
And this person mills their own grains, I think.
Yes.
They roll the oats
and stuff? Oh, yeah, we've been there.
And it makes such a difference.
We have the flakes, too. We've got all the flakes, the rye flakes, spelt flakes. Well, here, it's all here.
It makes a point of doing it cold, cold rolled, I guess. I don't know if everybody does, but...
Everybody does, and that's part of the problem.
Okay.
Stuff is just great.
This is Peter's medicine. He believes this cures what ails you.
In Switzerland, we eat this raw. My family's done it. My parents, my grandparents, my children, my grandchildren, we put a bit of milk. Like, people eat Kellogg's here. But even myself, I eat it raw just like that.
But it's so good for you.
And you get all the nutrition out of it. It's especially the way this is made. It's fabulous.
Yeah, this we brought in a few weeks ago, so that's why basically it's showcased here at the front, because the flour and the oats rolled, steel cut, all that stuff is done at the other end. So.
And the flavor is great too, and what we do is we give it a little tiny pulse in the food processor and use it for breading stuff.
Of course.
It's beautiful.
Bruce, you made the point of, pointed out how important it was for things to be cold rolled as opposed. Mm-hmm. So what's the difference that makes? Why is it that important?
You're breaking down the enzymes when you hot roll, especially hot steel roll.
Yeah.
That's a lot of the gluten-free issue, not all of it. Celiac is certainly a concern, and some people are genuinely gluten intolerant, but a lot of the gluten intolerance is the fact that a lot of the flour you're eating now is GMO'd, and the fact that a lot of it is hot rolled in mills and stuff. So they've changed the enzyme structure, the flour has been changed to the point where your body can't process it.
Right.
If you eat proper wheat, that proper being a term my partner and I bandy back and forth with Gay Abandon, but if you eat good wheat like red fife wheat or older wheats, hard wheats, they're much easier for your body to process and much better for you. They're whole. They're not ground as finely. They're not refined as much. There is nothing added to them.
So easier on the digestive system.
Oh, much easier on the digestive system.
So, so Peter and Dory were quite proud of their display there. They had kamut flakes and oat flakes, and literally you could just take them and eat them raw, and they were very sweet and tasted quite yummy.
Yeah.
But you could hear Peter was sort of waxing a little bit evangelical on the medicinal properties of this. He's got a little story here that he tells about a mom that came in with a daughter that was not well. And he convinced her. Well, here, I'll let him tell the story.
I had a gal come in here. She had a little girl. Coughing, took her to the doctor, couldn't figure out what it was. And I did the same thing as I just did with you now. I said, put that in your mouth and chew it. And she did. The mother did. They didn't know what to do with the girl anymore. She came to me and she said, she gave the little girl, and that's not easy to chew for a little kid. The kid chewed it, got hooked on it. The same night, slept through the night. Took care of it right away, because in oats, it has one of the best healing, oats and honey.
It's amazing to me. People spend vast amounts of money on granola. Really second-rate granola. A couple of cups of each of those flakes.
Get some dried
Dried cranberries and stuff.
Exactly.
And bang it in there with some local honey.
Coconuts, exactly.
Sure. And you've just made your own granola, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's really fabulous.
I believe him. I believe every word that he says.
Well, oats are really good for you, and honey is a superfood.
Yes, that's
honey
true.
Is really spectacular for you, as long as we keep taking care of our bees and stop spraying pesticides everywhere.
And also take the trouble, I guess, to source some really good, fresh, natural honey, one that hasn't been
You should be sourcing honey locally, yeah. within about 100 kilometers of where you live. And then it has all the things that are in your natural ecosphere in that honey, which makes it good for your body, easy for your body to process, builds up all your immune system. Funnily enough, when I was a young apprentice, two Cambodian women that worked in the front kitchen, when we went in hungover, which was not unoften, would feel sorry for us and make us ginger honey and lemon tea.
Huh?
And it was the most beautiful thing in the world, and it tasted great. And the honey certainly soothed your throat and parched throat, and the ginger and lemon helped your headache, and it was quite a lovely combination. But honey in many forms is just so good for you. And it's an often overlooked ingredient. People don't think of it a lot. And the Swiss have a few beautiful dishes with honey. There's one that I love, partly because I love the name, Engadiner Nusstorte, but also because of what it is. And it's basically honey, cream, and butter cooked down with about 5 different kinds of nuts.
Oh, man.
And then baked into a double crust pie shell.
Oh, man.
It's so good. It's so absolutely delicious.
Yeah. Let's continue our little tour of Penny's Market. We're going down the left-hand aisle, and at the very end of that aisle is the little butcher counter that Peter has set up, and he's got all sorts of cold cuts and different meats there, so let's let Peter tell us about that.
This is a salami, as you can see, and it's smoked. That, again, is my beef. And when was the last time you dared to eat bologna? Because, I mean, you may as well eat hot dog when you're buying bologna at the store.
Tube steak, yeah.
Tube steak, yeah.
Well, this is made with my beef and the same ham that you guys just had.
That's the way bologna tasted when I was a kid.
That's proper bologna.
It actually has flavor.
I have several meatloaves, too. I have, the whole gauntlet. I can give you a taste of cheese.
Nice cheeses.
Yeah, the cheeses
are good. The cheeses are just...
It's got some unpasteurized milk cheese there. A couple from Quebec.
Some is from the monks, and some are from... They're local. They're all within 100 kilometers. There's a Swiss guy, Fritz, on the South Shore. He makes quite a few of them. Fabulous cheese, too. It's a big, big thing here. I had a hunk of unpasteurized cheese, cheddar. I got an old cheddar here. That is so hard, and you could almost use it as a Parmesan.
Oh,
it,
I make what I call Canadian pesto, and instead of using olive oil, pine nuts, and Parmesan, I use sunflower seeds, cold-pressed canola oil, and cheddar, old cheddar.
Huh?
And it makes great pesto.
Here, I'll let you taste this one. This one is one we just got in, really nice.
You could tell Peter was generously giving us samples of, first of all, cold cuts, and then we got into the cheese section there. So, Bruce, what were your impressions of some of the nice pieces of ham and salami and bologna that we were trying out?
Well, the cold cuts were lovely, and they had really clean flavors, and the seasonings were nice, and you could tell they weren't mass-produced, and it's the kind of thing that, you know... Again, as we move forward with the show, you're going to realize that there's lots of proselytizing to be had and lots of issues to be discussed. And one of the interesting things is foodborne illness is a huge thing these days. It's one of the reasons people are returning to farmers markets and returning to small food manufacturers, because they want to know the source of their food. We've had this hepatitis A food outbreak. You've got a major global company offering free hepatitis A shots because the fruit they were selling was contaminated. That's an issue.
That's incredible.
Now it can happen in different ways, and there's different reasons why it happens. So I'm not condemning anybody for it happening, but I'm just saying it does happen. And the times it seems to happen are more. You get the big foodborne illnesses with meat in the last few years.
Like
I've not
listeria.
Been
yeah.
some guy down the road that makes stuff in his butcher shop. They've been big corporations.
The big operations. That's
because
right.
the problem is that the people that are working there don't have a vested interest in what they're producing.
Mm-hmm.
They're having to produce for a smaller wage and work like demons. Mm-hmm. And so when it's time to go from room A to room B and you have to change your shoes or worry about sanitation, you're being pushed to the limits to work as hard as you can. You're going to skip steps.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
those are crucial steps
yes.
when you're dealing with food.
Yeah.
The small person that's manufacturing, it's one guy, he or she takes great care in what they're doing.
Well, they have a vested interest, right?
They will be out of business.
Yeah, exactly.
They can't put a full page ad in the Globe and Mail apologizing to the whole country
yeah.
for poisoning us.
Yes.
But It's a good point. So they're out of business.
That's a good point.
So we have to think about these things when we're buying these foods, and they're all considerations to be made.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So Peter was very, very proud of his the cold cuts he was offering.
And as he should be.
Yeah, and made with his beef, he kept on saying, and he knows the fellow that raises the pigs that go into the ham, and I bought some smoked ham hocks there that are just phenomenal, just like...
Yeah, really smoked ham hocks are great.
Oh, man.
We're going to smoke some at work tomorrow.
Oh, is that right?
Okay. From Arches Pigs.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, yep. Another local producer that I'm sure we'll be talking about on the show. And you may have noticed our mouths were sort of full where we were talking there, but I think at one point you were taking a look at his meat freezer here and looking at the different cuts that he had had in the freezer.
And some of the nice, what people call off cuts, like a cross rib or a short rib.
Yeah.
I love it. Way more flavor in there.
The hamburger, when you fry it up, it doesn't shrink. And you're not hungry 2 hours after you eat it.
Well, and you haven't, because you haven't ground it 3 times either, to grind the blood back into it, so it still looks nice and shiny.
And it comes from one animal, not yeah. 100.
And he's, exactly. And he's always got some nice beef bones here. I'm always got a broth going with these bones.
Yeah, I love this beef bone broth kick everybody's on.
But what they don't know is that the marrow collects all the Roundup and chemicals. And I don't brag about much, but my farm, and it just shows that it can be done, I've been doing this for 25 years. I have never bought an ounce of chemicals. Never.
Amazing, eh?
And yeah. I do between 400 and 500 tons of hay a year, because I can't stand here and brag about feeding just grass and hay. You gotta put up or shut up.
And he's got the photos to prove it. He's got some old pickup truck that he's taken off the road, but he uses it to tow the trailers around his fields with these huge loads of hay on them. Somebody threatened to report him to the Cruelty to Pickup Truck Society. But that is a lot of hay, between 400 and 500 tons of hay. And he does it. He does it because he believes that grass-fed means grass-fed all the year round. You can hear the commitment in his voice. He loves He loves what he does. So he is not certified organic, Peter is, but he is, as he says, he's completely natural and is very conscientious about how he treats his herd. I've heard him tell a story about taking some of his livestock to the slaughterhouse and getting there and not being happy about the vibe and the look and the way things were, you know, just happening around the intake of the animals and that kind of thing. And he turned around and brought his animals back home again. He said, I'll come another day when things are a little better, because it just didn't feel right to him. So kind of person that really cares about his animals and their well-being right up until the very end. And I think it makes a difference in his product. Tell us a little bit more, Bruce, about the offcuts. You spotted that right away in his freezer. And what do you mean by that exactly?
Well, when most people think of cooking beef in particular, they automatically go to the prime cut. So what's the first, if you say to someone you're going to put beef on the barbecue, what's the first thing they say?
T-bone steak
or ribeye steak or sirloin steak.
Yeah.
They always, that's sort of the prime cuts. And those are lovely and wonderful and great, but they're not particularly difficult to cook. They're already tender because of the nature of the muscle. They're already well marbled. So you really, at least if you've got a good animal, so you're already 80% of the way there. It doesn't really take a lot of skill to put it on the barbecue, time it, turn it over, and take it off. That's not a difficult thing. Now, when you get up into the what's called the forequarter, the top of the animal, sort of the rib cage and breastplate up into the shoulders and the fork and that part of the beef, you get beef that has a much richer, deeper flavor because of all the natural collagen in there. You get beef that takes a while to cook, but has a much better, to my mind, a much more interesting texture as well.
Mm.
And there's so many things you can do with it. You can cook it forever so that it breaks down and actually becomes not unlike pulled pork, but actually shreds.
Yes.
We do that quite often. You can cube it and use it in things like stews and chilies. I would much rather use cubed beef from the forequarter than from the hip to make a stew or a chili. It's not dry. It's well marbled. It breaks down nicely when it cooks. It gets soft and tender.
Is that something that people can ask for when they go to a meat counter?
Oh, sure it is.
I want cubes from the forequarter rather than
the hide not in the average grocery store, no. But that's why you want to go
to a good
start developing a relationship with a good butcher.
Yeah.
You could probably do it at somewhere like L'Oreal, places like that.
Yes, yes.
And then the other thing is that you can take steaks and you can do a sort of a combination method of cooking them where you braise them until they're pretty much done, let them cool overnight in the fridge, and then take them out and put a glaze on them and finish them on the barbecue, and they're absolutely delicious. So you get the combination of softness from braising them slowly in liquid,
yes,
and then you lift them out very carefully, put them on the barbecue and turn them and paint them with a nice glaze, could be lots of different things, and then take them off and you have that crisp meat, which is wonderful, and that soft texture underneath.
Oh, man, you're making me hungry.
Yeah.
That sounds fantastic. Yeah, yeah, excellent. So that's what you meant by offcuts. It's the little cuts that would be coming from around the shoulders and the neck.
Cross ribs, short ribs, chuck, those sorts of cuts.
Yeah. I noticed one thing about Peter's meat. It does require special care because it tends to be a little bit chewier and not as tender as the stuff.
That's right.
You know, out of the wrapper. So you have to pay attention.
You marinate it. You give it a little more love. That's fine. I'd rather eat flank steak, quite frankly, any day of the week than filet mignon. Filet mignon is okay, but it's very one-dimensional. It has no fat to give it flavor, and it's totally tender. You can't really mess it up. The one place that I really like it is to highly season it. So lots of olive oil, salt, pepper, fresh thyme, garlic, roast it, and just basically sear it on the outside and roast it quite rare, between medium rare and very rare, and then let it cool and eat it cold, sliced.
Wow.
As part of a buffet or a cold. But that's my favorite way to eat filet.
Yeah, that sounds excellent. I once saw a recipe where somebody did, just as you described it, except they seared it on the outside but baked it like for 10 or 12 hours at a really, really low temperature. And it was medium rare when it finished, but it took them a long time to get there. But it was an interesting concept.
Well, that's the whole concept of cooking right now, is the low, super, super low on slow.
Yeah, yeah.
It is a good way.
I guess it allows all the tissues to sort of just disintegrate slowly and come up with a very tender product. Interesting. Let's continue our little tour here of Penny's Market. So we've hit the cold cuts, we've hit the cheeses. Oh, this was surprising. We were coming around to one of the freezers and we looked inside and I thought, oh, it's another freezer full of Peter's meat, but it was a little bit different.
Dory does a dog food made with my beef.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
She has beef tongue cut up into steaks. She has bones, all kinds, big and small, all with our bones and stuff.
That's going to make them happy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought that was kind of neat. You know, if it's good enough for the master, then it's good enough for the dog. You know, so they got all sorts of cuts there of bones and piece of tongue, and I guess the off cuts maybe. So that
tongue's not an off cut. Tongue is genius, man. You cook it the right way. It's delicious.
I've had tongue. Yeah, I love tongue. But keep in mind that, you know, the pets deserve to have a healthy diet as well. So that was a part of what they had on display there. I thought it was quite neat.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to catch Peter here waxing eloquent about his herd. I think he whipped out some photos, actually, and was showing you his belted Galloway out in the field. And let's see if we can capture Peter sharing that.
I have a herd of these.
Cool. Oh, nice. Where's your farm?
North Lancaster.
Beautiful.
Those are his babies.
Maybe about 130 now, Pete?
There's always over 100. Way too many.
You said you had how many calves in the last week or so?
We had four calves in the last 4 or 5 days.
Okay. Yeah.
With this cold.
Yeah.
I feed grass and hay. I can, with these animals, get away with it.
Yes.
Because most of the animals today are as tall as you and me.
Yeah.
And that's not the way it's supposed to be. And if you want to get them to that being that tall, you have to put something in front of them.
And we were talking this morning about, you know, finishing cows on corn and how cruel it is, because they're not meant to eat corn.
They actually advertise it at the grocery store.
Yeah.
The flyer.
Yeah.
AAA beef, corn finished. Well, anybody that knows anything about food would say, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like Bruce said, it's cruel. It's actually cruel.
So, the famous grain-finished beef controversy. More and more people are tuning into this, that it's not necessarily a healthy thing to be doing to a herbivore.
No, it's pretty hard for them to digest.
Yeah, yeah. Their four stomachs just weren't made for grains. I remember reading in, Michael Pollan's book, The Omnivore's Dilemma. He describes in the feedlots, they actually give the animals anti-frothing agents because they tend to froth up so much that they could start to have breathing problems from trying to process the grain in their gut. So it's quite a scary prospect. Any comments on CAFOs in general or the way they raise mainstream beef?
I'm going to approach it from another angle. We all like to eat beef. It's a wonderful thing, and it tastes great, and when you do it and finish it in different ways, it can be quite lovely. There's two things we need to think about. One is that we need to eat less. So that is to say that your portion size needs to be a lot smaller.
Yes.
When my partner and I eat a steak, we'll buy 1 8-ounce steak, I'll cook it, and I'll slice it. So we each wind up with about 4 ounces of meat, and we're both totally happy. Yeah. It's wonderful.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
So that's one big thing. And we don't need to eat it all the time. And the other thing is to eat from all the different parts of the animal on a regular basis. Places that specialize in one cut of beef. In order for a steakhouse chain to serve New York strip steaks, how many cows do you think that takes? Huge amount.
Yes.
So have some fun and eat other parts of the animal. Like I said, eat the front part. Eat the cross rib. Eat the whatever. Eat flank steak. Eat shanks. Shanks are wonderful. Mm. You take beef shanks and cook them slowly. They're glorious. And, of course, you can't cook a beef shank on a Wednesday night when you're coming home and you've got a half an hour to cook dinner.
No.
It takes 3 hours to make a beef shank tender. So get 10 of them and cook them on a Saturday afternoon and portion them out into Tupperware and put them in your freezer.
Yeah.
And then when you get home on Wednesday, you've got a beautiful rich stew. And all you have to do is make a quick polenta or grain pilaf or whatever to go with it. Salad, you've got dinner. So instead of thinking that we shouldn't eat beef at all or how cruel it is to eat beef or whatever, if we eat less, then we'll have to grow less, then we'll have to have less feedlot beef, then we can all start eating beef that's been raised in a reasonable, ethical manner, and it's just a better all-round thing. And, you know, burgers, I mean, that's not going to change, but the amount of ground beef that goes into burgers is frightening.
Yeah, yeah.
Staggering.
Yeah. You make a really good point. If we were more mindful, as you say, about the quantities. But
portion size is ridiculous.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And also the part of the animal that we're going to eat. I mean, I know if it's ground, then we haven't got a clue. But otherwise, you know, when we're picking cuts, you know, like if we keep on just going to the old tried and true, you're right. Then it means that more and more animals have to die to fill that. So if we just slowly started expanding the repertoire to include the offcuts, as you call them, it would have a huge impact.
Well, and it's like things like lamb rack. Like lamb rack is not, to me, even the best part of the animal. It's delicious and it's tender and it's wonderful. Just for fun, a little while ago, I cooked some lamb rack at home and it was delicious. It was great. But I have to be quite honest when I say I would much rather eat the leg or the shoulder.
Or the shank. I'm a big shank fan myself.
Shanks are wonderful.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
Any of those are quite lovely.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so variety of cuts is a really, people don't realize it. It has an implication.
Change it up, eat the whole animal, and buy the whole animal.
Yes, yeah, there's an
idea. Get two friends or three friends and buy a whole cow.
Yeah.
And buy the whole thing from a local person and divide it up. Get it home in boxes, spread it all out on the kitchen table and go, okay, I'll take the four shanks, you take four shanks, you take two chops, I'll take two chops, and split it all up. And then you've bought a whole animal, and you're honoring the whole animal. Yeah.
And it's an education, too, to learn how to cook all of those different cuts.
It's fun.
It's a good thing, yeah, absolutely. Wow, that's quite exciting. We're gonna do one or two more little clips here from Peter and his market, and then we'll tie off that part of the show.
I have a local guy doing chicken.
That's a huge thing.
Yeah, and he quarters them up, but his quarters are not what you think at the store. He takes a saw and cuts it in quarters. He's just a real...
So it's a real quarter chicken.
This guy is so down to earth. They're such nice people. It's like, been with us for a long time, this guy.
Yeah, the freezer was full of really nice cuts of chicken there. We looked into it, and it was quite attractive.
Well, and I think chicken is one of the biggest places where you can discern the difference between properly raised, well-fed, pastured animal and a battery-raised hen
something
that has absolutely
life in
no
cage.
Flavor.
Yeah.
You can virtually eat the bones. They're so soft.
Yeah.
Even when if you do any butchery of the chickens where you try and take a knife and cut through the bone, you virtually can't cut through the bones of these kinds of chickens, but through a little 2-pound fryer that you buy out of the local supermarché, you can practically snap them with your fingers.
Yeah,
like, it's amazing.
You're right, there's nothing there.
And the flavor is just, and the color, you can tell by the color of the fat and the color of the skin, that they're just, it's such a better bird.
Yeah. So that's the kind of chickens that are available at Penny's Market. So as we came around past the cold cuts counter and cheeses and everything, we went up the middle aisle, and that there was a small display there of locally pressed sunflower seed oil. And Peter was very proud of this particular product.
We have sunflower oil from Les Cèdres, and it's a high in oleic content sunflower oil. We sell a lot of that. There's an easy test for olive oil to know if it's the right thing. Instead of sending it to be tested, just take a tablespoon, swallow it. If it burns you down the throat going down, the oleic acid content is okay. And this oil does that. Because today, with olive oil, you do know that there's, there's 100,000 liters being produced, there's a million sold. This is a cold-pressed sunflower, organic sunflower oil. It's local, and we sell it like crazy.
That's something I'm sure you've heard that before, that little test to see how authentic the olive oil is, but I guess it applies to other oils as well that contain oleic acid. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really interesting. If you get that burning sensation as it goes down your throat, then it's got a higher content of oleic acid. An indicator of not the whole thing though, I guess. How do you judge an oil?
Flavor, primarily on flavor. And what I'm going to use it for. So, you know, if I'm making pasta sauce, I'm looking for an oil that's peppery and robust and has a bigger flavor because it's got to shine through all that. Yeah. If I'm throwing it into a, if I'm using it to dress a salad, then I'm looking for a fruitier, lighter, greener oil. That's in olive oils. Canola oil I tend to use for bread making and as a dip for breads and for sort of an all-purpose kitchen oil. I use grapeseed oil a lot in the kitchen because it's high heat and it doesn't break down when it gets heated. You've got to be careful with some oils. You don't want to overheat them.
I've heard that olive oil is one of those, eh? Olive oil,
you don't want to heat above 160 degrees.
Right.
The other thing about olive oil, and I'm going to get smote by the Italian food gods when I say this, is I buy very little Italian olive oil anymore because there is a huge counterfeit market in European olive oils, particularly Italian olive oil.
Yeah, that's what Peter was referring to.
Yeah, so you can get some really high-end ones that are very good, but they're fiercely expensive.
Yeah.
But you can get really high quality and lovely oils from places like Lebanon, Greece, Crete. Mm. One of my favorite olive oils I ever had was from Crete, Tunisia, Morocco. Even California has a good olive oil industry.
Oh, wow.
So there are other oils out there and other alternatives. And again, it's a matter of tasting, and tasting what you want. What are you using the oil for? Where's it going?
Yeah.
What's it going to be used for?
I have a feeling, Bruce, that we're going to be coming back to this topic. Maybe we can dedicate a whole show to cooking oils because it's quite a broad and wide-ranging topic.
Well, and fats in general.
Yes.
There's a couple of really good books. There's one by a woman named Jennifer McLaughlin who wrote a book named Fat, and there's another one called Fats That Heal, Fats That Kill by a guy named Udo Erasmus, which are very good, and they discuss what you should and shouldn't be eating. And
Personally, I made a big move towards coconut oil. It's my go-to oil now in the kitchen, and I'm steering, well, and some hemp oil. I'm steering clear of canola oil for the most part. But I'm not sure I could even give you a good reason why I'm doing that. But that's what I do personally. But you're right. It's a wide-ranging topic, and I'm sure we could spend a whole episode on that. So that'll be something to look forward to. So we're going to wind up with our visit here to Penny's Market. One of the features that makes it different from other markets, at least ones around here, which is that they have a central cash out. You can go around to the different displays and different tables, and there are products that are sourced from different local producers. But when it comes time to cash out, you just go to the counter by the door, and it's really, really convenient. I know it's not the traditional sort of market way, but sometimes I think it's an advantage around here because people are not so used to dealing with vendors, you know, behind every table, and some people are shy about it. And I've heard people say that's why they don't go to markets, because there's somebody standing behind the table sort of watching you when you're picking your thing, you know. And to market goers, you say, well, yeah, that's what it's all about. But to people who don't have the market habit, they're sort of intimidated by it, you know? So I think there's an education process that needs to take place there, but it's really easy.
Well, there is. You should be more intimidated by the vegetables that are being oversprayed with water in your local grocery store set to compost.
Good point. Yes.
And you should be more intimidated by the meat that's wrapped in plastic wrap and
on with styrofoam trays.
Of unknown origin on styrofoam trays.
Yeah.
And you should be more intimidated by that
Good
than
point.
You should be by a farmer standing there that you can actually set a dialogue up with and say, what is that? And
he's actually tell you, literally standing behind his
they're
product.
They're standing there, and what is that? That's a kohlrabi. Well, what the hell do I do with a kohlrabi? Well, this is what you do with it.
Yeah.
What's that? That's a celery root. What do I do with it? And expand your horizons and stop eating out of season vegetables and stop eating out of season product and start eating with the seasons, with local. Look at all the stuff. You could have made the most extraordinary soup with the first 10 feet of that market.
You're right.
Potatoes, leeks, celery root.
Yeah.
And all you need is a wadge of garlic and you've got the most beautiful soup on the planet. Yeah. Or slice up the leeks and the celery root and toss it with cream and grated cheese, and instead of scalloped potatoes, you've made a celery root and leek gratin.
Yeah.
And think outside the box. Yeah. It's not difficult. Mm. And it's not because I'm a chef that I say that. It's because it's not hard.
Mm. Very apropos, I think, because a lot of people are sort of trying to go back to a healthier place and looking for alternatives to what you just described, you know, the meat, the plastic-wrapped meat and the highly processed foods, and they don't always know where. So hopefully this show is going to be a place where they'll learn what the possibilities are and what the alternatives are. Let's get Janice to tell us what kind of clientele comes through the front door at Penny's, and she gave us a little bit of an overview. It was kind of interesting.
How many people would you say are local, and how many come off the highway? Do you see, attract people off the highway?
We do attract people off the highway, more in the summer. In the summer, we get a lot of people off the highway, tourists, people doing road trips.
Yeah.
We get a lot of international tourists who will pull off because they see the sign, they'll stop here, they'll buy ingredients for their lunch, you know, some bread, some tomatoes, some cheese, and sit outside of the table and have their lunch, and then get back in the car and continue on to Ottawa. So that's the kind of people we get off the highway. And then we have our regulars. We have people that we see almost every week without fail. They come, they do their shopping, you know, they buy their beef and their bread and so on and so forth.
So it's a good mix of newbies and regulars.
Yeah.
Very good.
We say off the highway. A lot of the customers that do come are people that at one point came through the highway, and the access is so important.
Yes.
Like from Hudson to here, it's 20 minutes. I'm sure from Hudson to here is less long than going to the Atwater Market in Montreal.
So what goes on at Penny's on the... Well, twice a week, actually. They're open on Saturdays, like the Van Cleek Hill Farmers Market, and they're also open on Tuesdays, Tuesday afternoons. I think it's from 3 in the afternoon until 7 for people who are rushing home from work and looking for something quick to pick up on the way home. That gives us a real good overview, Bruce, of Penny's Markets. Any kind of observations you want to make on the operation? What were your first impressions?
No, I think it was quite lovely, and one of the great things about it was that there was a broad array of things. So you had meat, poultry, cheeses, grains, vegetables, and then some staples, some vinegars, some cornmeal, some things like that. So you could really sort of one-stop shop, get a lot of things.
Yeah.
It is unfortunate, even for chefs now, that one-stop shopping is important. People with their busy lives and such don't always have time to go to four different places to buy things. So if they can find it in one spot, well, that's good.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be nice to get people going. Farmers markets are busy, 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 and opening and getting busier all the time. Ottawa has a year-round farmers market now. Vancouver, Salt Spring, Toronto has many. They're getting busier, but people will still say, I don't have time to go to the market.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's true. It's really amazing. Know. Yeah, yeah. But we're really blessed. We have actually 2 year-round markets within easy driving distance of Vancouver Hill here. I try to encourage people to support them and go there regularly, because these people are really trying hard to make a go of it. And as you say, there's an incredible variety there. And you could literally walk in there and come away with everything you need to cook a really nice meal. So that was Penny's Market. One little comment that I would make, and I was curious to see what you had to say about it. I found they were a little reticent to reveal their sources for some things, you know, and it was sort of going against the current. That's what farmers markets are known for, as we were just saying a few minutes ago, right? Usually the producer is standing there at the table and he'll tell you anything you want to know about the particular product that you're thinking of buying.
I think they were willing to speak to the provenance and the quality of it and say, yes, this is from a farmer and this is grown in such and such. I think perhaps part of the reason they were a little reticent on some things is because they're a business.
Yeah,
it's important for them as a business to sell product. That's how they make a living, is basically reselling, because they're, well, Peter's a beef farmer, so he's selling his own beef.
Yeah.
But on the other things,
otherwise,
he's not.
It's reselling.
And so he's reselling. And so if he says to you, well, I got this at Fred's down the road, well, you might skip him out and go to Fred.
Yeah.
He wants to bring you into the fold of his market.
That's understandable.
And that's I can totally get that.
Yeah. That's a good point.
I can totally get that. Yeah. So that may be the reticence there.
Yeah. Because they were very knowledgeable, and they were really willing to say tell you everything they knew about the provenance and the kind of person they were and all that kind of stuff.
Well, so, it's like someone asked me for a recipe the other day, and I said no. And they were kind of thingy about it, and they were like, well, what do you mean no? And I said, there's lots of recipes I'll share with you.
Yeah.
Tons of recipes I'll share with you. But some recipes that I've developed professionally that have taken me a great deal of time to perfect, a great deal of, like, in some cases, years to perfect.
Yeah.
I am much more reticent to share, because I'm like, you know what? I had to figure it out.
Yeah.
You go figure it out on your own.
That's a good story. Yeah.
Even especially to other chefs, I will often say, you're a chef. Go figure it out.
Yeah. It's your livelihood after all. I mean, that's, you know, you do it
professionally. I worked hard on that.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And it's the same way. They worked hard to source that stuff out, find it. And if you want to find it at the source, then you can. It's probably on the bag or the packaging somewhere. This came from such and such a place in...
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
but
yeah.
They want to make a living, and I can respect and understand that.
Yeah, fair enough. That's a good observation. Yeah. So overall, I think I would give Petty's pretty high marks for what they're doing. They're really,
it's a wonderful place. Yeah. I'll go back again.
Yeah, and just so our listeners know, we're planning on doing this with Vancouver Hill Farmers Market
well,
right?
Yes, we will do it soon.
We're going to go for a visit down there. I'm going to get a mic on to Chef Bruce, and we're going to do a little tour of the market and see what they're up to, and maybe capture some of the dialogue between you and the different producers that are at the tables. I think that'll be fun.
Some of whom we already use.
Yeah? Like who?
Justin.
Yeah, for example.
From Metal Archerized Farms.
Yeah.
We've been talking to a little bit to Jambel, Jamaican cuisine,
yes.
Belgian Jamaican.
Yeah.
About doing some stuff together, a few of the other people.
Very good. Interesting. Yeah, so that's something to look forward to. In the coming weeks, we're going to do a little trip down to Vancouver Hill Farmers Market and bring you back a full report. And also, I think from time to time, Bruce, you're going to be bringing us a reminder or an update on what's coming online in terms of either foraged foods or just locally grown foods.
It's going to start to be really exciting. Within the next couple of weeks, you should start to see fiddleheads, wild leeks. You'll start to see, we're probably still a good 4 weeks away from asparagus, but asparagus is one of my top favorite vegetables. And we'll talk about a wonderful producer I know across the river near Montebello.
Okay.
But all these things will start to be coming up, and every week we'll be able to say what is in the market and what is available.
Okay, something to look forward to, really. So be sure to tune in. And one last detail, Bruce, before we sign off. People may have noticed we still don't have a title of this show yet.
I think we should put that up to the people.
Yeah, let's put it out there to our listeners. Suggest a title for this food show, the show about food with Chef Bruce from Bose, and send it in to us. So you can send it to info@vancleekfm.com, and that'll make its way to us, and let us know what you think the show should be called. And we'll just do a little draw, or we'll pick our favorite one, and you can be a part of the show that way. Anyway, thanks, Bruce, for coming in today and sharing all of your experience and knowledge about food and your observations on Penny's Market. It was really fun.
A great pleasure. We'll talk to you again.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.